been taking my time. I feel like I'm out of my mind. It feels like my life ain't mine.
Hey guys, welcome back to Project Mayday. These are your hosts, Bree and G. And today we have my man,
Mike Lucero.
We have a little bromance,
definitely going back to Riverside County days.
And we were in the same battalion, and this guy's got an incredible story. He's works at Tucson Fire Department, then came over to Riverside, then now he's currently at Ventura, where he's about to finish up probation, buddy. Congrats. And yeah, glad to have you on, bud.
Thanks, brother. Good to see you again.
Absolutely.
So, Mike, can you share what got you interested in fire and EMS?
Let's see. I'd actually say it started actually in high school. There was an ROP program, regional occupational program that started. It was actually just an elective after school. So just a course that I took one or two times a week. Started talking to some friends and joined it. Just got a little bit of feelers for it. And then that from there, it kind of just transposed into the fire service, going from explorers and then working my way into the fire service as a full-time position, non-suppression.
Gotcha.
And that kind of just what exposed me to the fire service.
Gotcha. And I know you look like you're in your 20s, but you're an old man, man. He's what, 42? About to be 43?
I'll be 43 January 9th.
Gotcha. So you've been in this industry a long, long time, man.
Yeah, it'll be my first app went out in 1999, so last century.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome. So with you, man, and like I said, you and I worked at the same department together, same battalion, so we ran a lot of gnarly calls together.
Good times.
Absolutely good times. Good and bad times, but we've had those talks, you know, those long talks at the station until 3 o'clock in the morning, and that's what I cherish the most with you. So I don't want to kind of tap into that again with you here. Let's go back, you know, when you got to Riverside and the emotional toll that it took because you were force hired so many times and you were, you know, at the station, Jessica's at home, you know, with Misha, your daughter. And what was that stress like?
So I think even to rewind a little bit further than that, I was working in Tucson prior to Riverside. So I was away from California, 7 hours, 500 miles away. Mm. But I was single, no kids, not married. So free at will to do whatever I'd like. And fast forward to Riverside, you know, now I'm married with kids. And now I'm home, yet I'm 3 to 4 hours away from my house where I work. So that shifted gears for me. I'd say the one big great thing I have is that my wife is 100% on board. I have to give it to her because I hear a lot of other dudes. They're always like, oh, my wife said this, my wife said that. But my wife, personally, she's like, do what you got to do. She never complains. So she makes it pretty easy for me when it comes to my job and my occupation. But on the flip side, being at in Riverside, great department. Like you working with G's, I mean, it makes it all the difference. The guys are what make it all the difference. But being stuck anywhere between 10, 14, 21 days straight, I just realized that I did not want to watch my daughter grow up through FaceTime as we're doing right now. Yeah. Even though we had that interaction, there's no physical interaction that you can have. And it just wasn't going to work for me. I actually got to a point where I needed to think about it, talk with Jessica and say, hey, do I want to switch careers? Mm. Even though I loved it so much.
Well, can we talk about, so yeah. You said 10 to 21 day stints, and obviously we're not talking about strike teams. So,
right. So
can you explain how that happened?
Yeah. Well, so I was on Riverside County Cal Fire's department for less than a year, or a little over, so I learned a little bit about the department. There's some things that I'm not 100% clear on, but from what I understand is that they can hold you from a total of 21 days straight. You can take one day off as a break, and then they can reset you and put you back on for 21 days. They're known as staffing patterns. And so being that I'm a medic, they keep us most of the time within the county. Anyone non-medic will be shipped out of county if they have to go up and down the state. Regardless, while they're up the state, they need to backfill, and that's where I come into play. So it just made it really difficult. Made it really, really difficult to just be there. You know, you're getting paid. You're getting paid overtime. That's always a great help, but it doesn't replace being able to spend time with your loved ones.
And so you said 21 days. What was the longest? How many days total did you work in a month? That was like your longest stint.
So I think I did get breaks throughout it, but however, there was forces. So I would say on a 30 to 31 day month, I would probably be working anywhere between 20 to 24 days.
Wow. And was that the same?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that little week stretch that we had where, because we worked at the sister, you know, a sister station, 26 right. and 72. We run, you know, all the cardiac arrests together. And that one stent that week where I had one, and then 2 hours later you had one, and then I had one again, and then you had one. And it was like that dark, dark week, man.
Yeah.
No.
So it doesn't really, and that's the other hard part too, is that you'll be running calls nonstop. And this is where I have to tell you, where the guys come together and the women as well, that they come together and they just make it a better place. It's key to have good people that support you when you're in the workplace. If you don't have guys that you're not enjoying yourself with, it's going to make it a very, very long day or a week as being, you know, forced. Yeah. 10, 21 days at a time.
Yeah. And you were in that predicament where you and your company officer didn't get along very well, you know? Yeah. So, you know, added on that you're not seeing Misha and you're not seeing Jessica. And then on top of that, you're living with a person that you absolutely clash with. Mm-hmm. It just adds on to it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It creates a lot of stress, both because you're dealing with stuff at home, you're dealing with stuff in the workplace, and then not on top of that, you're also dealing with running the medical calls, knowing your protocols, you know, assessing a patient, dealing with a patient's life that's in your hands that you need to deliver to the hospital. So it's just constant stress throughout it all. And at some point, there's a breaking point where you truly need a break. You really do.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really concerning, you know, 75% of your time, 75 to maybe even 80% of your time in a month is spent running calls at a firehouse per force hires, staffing patterns. Obviously, that's going to create mental unwellness because all you're seeing are people's worst days and there's no outlet besides this communication of a brotherhood, sisterhood that's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, these force hires are draining.
Right.
So is that a reason you left?
Yeah, that was one of the major things. I actually was in the process with LA County. I had a very fortunate opportunity with Ventura City that came up, and it was right place, right time that things worked out for me. But we did, my wife and I did talk about it, and we did say that if LA County didn't come through or some other opportunity that where I was testing within the next 2 to 3 years, that I was seriously looking at another career path. Wow. And because it just wasn't something that I thought was sustainable for my livelihood. If I'm working so hard in a job that I love, why would I want to destroy a greater love, which is my family, for a job that all I'm going to do is be basically a meat in the seat, so to speak. Like I said, it's not knocking the department. It's just the climate we're in right now and the economy. And it's just forcing a lot of people to be in that position. And it's not fun, but you can see where that commitment comes into play with each person that's out there. They're devoted to doing this.
Yeah. So, Misha, how does she... How did she, I mean, she was 3 or 4 when you were at Riverside?
Yeah, she was, let's see. Yeah. 2, 3 years old.
Yeah. And it was like kind of seeing her dad. She was always excited when she saw you because she hadn't seen you in so long. Right. So it was like you coming home. Yeah. It was like a huge, huge thing. I mean, her face would light up when you would, you know, you FaceTime me when you would go see her. So I think it's the absence. And then you coming back in, it's like a whole new person kind of, you know, it was just amazing. Yeah.
And the thing is like, for me, I wasn't always a firefighter since 1999, like we talked about, and since I put my first app in years ago. However, I was within the fire service in the other capacities as a fire dispatcher and then repairing fire equipment. But I also listened to a lot of firefighters when I was an explorer and a reserve when I was really young. And that was about 20 years ago, G. And so I watched some of those guys, and you could just see some of them went through divorces. Some of them were dealing with a lot of different stressors. And I just saw some of my path starting to go in that direction. Mm-hmm. And I realized I don't want to be that statistic. I don't want to be that person. So with that in mind, I had to make a conscious decision. Okay, am I going to be going a different route? As much as I put my entire life into this, is it really worth it to cost my daughter. I've seen other guys where their kids grow up and we're sitting on a rig and we're talking or whatever, and the guys are saying, like, yeah, she's saying, you're never there for me anyways, Dad. And I know those guys love their daughter. However, mm-hmm. you're physically not there. So where do you have a leg to stand on when you come home when mom has been all four legs on the table to support this family at home? So the kids don't get to see what Dad's doing when he's away. And it just didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work for me. So fortunately, like I said, you know, I have a family who prayed really hard for me, and an opportunity presented itself, a freak accident that just kind of shed some light on me as a person who continued to apply to Ventura City, and the doors opened up for me, and I'm so super, super grateful.
You know, we do talk about in our intro podcast, and Zeph talks about how your kids don't really care what you do for a living. I mean, they don't care that you're saving lives or you're a big firefighter. They don't care. All they know you as is Dad, and they just know if you're home or not. So when we talk about these force hires and 80% of your time is being spent away from your children, I can see how, of course, it leads to divorce rates. Of course, you know, it leads to this disconnection, and you're just being bombarded, and you're closer to usually people in the station.
Yeah. Well, and even just getting with the force hires and the family dynamics with Jessica, there would be times when I was working in Riverside where she would ask me, are you coming home tomorrow? And I would say, I'm not sure yet, but I'll let you know. And even though I knew my day was open for the fall, like say tomorrow I was off, I wouldn't tell her I'm coming home until I knew I was in the car on the freeway, and then I would call her because there are many times where that 7 o'clock hour hit and then you hear that phone call ring and you just know you're getting forced either at your station or you're flying over to some other side of the battalion. That's another little stressor that comes into play with everything. And so some of the guys would tell me, like, don't ever tell your wife you're coming home, because she'll get mad because then she's making plans. And that was the one thing, that was exactly the one thing I can tell you, that you could never plan anything unless you had a vacation set, like a vacation time in the books. If you had a weekend free or what, you could never plan on anything.
So Mike, you know, you actually took a couple mental days at Riverside, you know, as far as just you needed to take care of yourself. And And so that, I was actually working behind you. I got forced behind you. However, I knew why you had taken, you know, those days off. So, I was PO'd that, you know, that I had to get forced my, you know, 2 days off that I had. However, I knew what it was for. And so, you know, that's the caveat. Like, you don't want to take days off because you're going to, you know, screw another person from going home, you know? So it's
a weird predicament. Because I mean, he and I are really close friends, you know, and, but you can see where, not necessarily backbiting, but you can see where, there can be internal issues as well. And it's not anything that we can control. You know, everyone's fighting to get a breath of air coming up, you know, just for a minute. And so the moment one comes up, another one needs to come down and work it, you know?
Absolutely. And then also, you know, you're on for so long and your patient care deteriorates. Your patient care definitely deteriorates. You can't be, you know, your first day on, first hour in, when you're 120 hours in, you can't, there's no way you can perform the same.
And it's almost funny because it's like, you can see a guy like where I work now, where you work a 48-hour stint. Let's say you get your rear handed to you, and you're pretty tired and stuff while you're just waiting to come off shift. But then you see these new guys come in, and they're like bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. They've had their coffee. They're well-rested. They're ready to check out their gear. So it's so important to be able to have that reset. Mm-hmm. And the community needs to have that fresh set of batteries with a new face. Yeah. And it keeps the image of our fire service fresh, and it keeps it clean, and it keeps it, presentable in all aspects, just assessing the patients and just being around the community.
Yeah. Not reaching that burnout where, you know, you aren't being nice anymore as a first responder because you're tired, and this is, you know, you're 22 days in or 21 days in, and you don't really care at 2 a.m. anymore because you're burned out. That's a huge problem for our community. Absolutely.
Yeah, and then also when, you know, it is the eighth or ninth day on, you and vice versa, I called you and I'm like, hey, is this the right dose, man? I don't really remember. I have a patient in front of me, but I got you on the phone, and it's just, you're just gone. You're gone mentally. Yeah. And, yeah, you know, going off of that, has there been any calls that still stick with you, or are you pretty much?
In Riverside, not so much. You know, like I said, working with UG, it was always nice because I knew when engine 26 was rolling and that 72 is coming in, or we always had this competition together. But it's always so nice to have somebody that you can look over your shoulder and know that you got, either whether it's a brother or sister, or just knowing that you have somebody that's there with you. It's so much more comforting. But to answer your question, my biggest one for me was in when I was working in Arizona, and I just was picking up a 12-hour trade for somebody during the day, and there was a horrible accident that occurred on the 10 freeway coming from New Mexico going to Los Angeles. And long story short, basically there were four elderly people in a car, two couples each, and the car basically rolled over. And it was a horrible accident to where three people had passed away and then one person barely survived. And that patient we transported. However, I don't know how in detail you want me to speak on this or not, but it still kind of shakes me up for a couple of reasons. And it's weird because for many years I was like, oh, PTSD, whatever. And I always would talk about it. I always thought it. I was like, oh, it's whatever. It's like, it's not going to happen to me or whatnot. But it was interesting because I was already off for 3 days. I came in for a 12-hour trade during the day, and I was going to be off for additional 3 days after that. We do a 5-6 schedule out in Arizona. And, so when I got up there and I was looking at this patient, all traffic is stopped. He stands there and he says, is my wife okay? And so as he said, is my wife okay? I'm looking down at his feet and there's just this portion of maybe it was his wife or the other couple. I'm not sure. And so that's always stuck with me. So we got in the medic ambulance with the other medics and we transported. I got off the engine and went to the hospital, to the trauma center. We transported the guy, and on our way back, we were the furthest away from downtown area. So our engine was the closest to that call. So they asked us to come back and do a washdown. So for me, a couple of things. One was that they were coming from Las Cruces, New Mexico, and going to Los Angeles. My grandparents are from Las Cruces, New Mexico, and they now live in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. At the time, my grandfather had just passed away. Mm. And so the elderly man looked like my grandfather. Mm. So it affected me, but it took a little bit of time. And so just sitting there on that washdown, you know, on that street, all I had time was just to think. And so that was around 3:00. I get off shift at 6:00. I have a friend asking me to meet up with them and grab a drink with them. And it just starts to marinate. To the point where it really affected me deeply, I'd say for about 2 months. I got a phone call, and this isn't to knock anybody by any means, but something that I learned, and I share it every time somebody asks about PTSD, is that I received a phone call by a member that was checking on me, but a phone call was about maybe 3 or 4 days after the incident. But they had unfortunately received either another phone call or something was tying them up with either. I couldn't remember if it was like a phone call or somebody was talking to them. But it basically, it's so important because I was not willing to talk about it. However, the moment that I was ready to open up, there was an interruption. Mm. And that interruption, I recessed back and I decided I won't share or won't talk about it. So I felt, I mean, maybe that's just how I reacted. But I just thought it was such a good teaching point because, and I even shared it with the gentleman who called me about it, and he recognized it, and I keep it private to who it was because it doesn't really matter. But it's just a good teaching point that when you open that opportunity to share with or ask somebody about an incident that may have been pretty sensitive, make sure all your channels are turned off. Make sure your focus is just on that person because, it really did. It affected me. I think it took a lot longer than it should have. I really needed somebody to talk to about it. I definitely was not going to talk about it with Jessica. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't feel like I had any real true outlet, you know? Mm-hmm. But with UG, like, you know, we've been friends for a while, man. I could talk to you about anything. And that's kind of how we work. on our network. You find something that you can latch on to.
Yeah.
And that's how it goes. And that's how I manage it.
So moving forward with that story and, you know, the phone call, has that affected how you present yourself with mental wellness, either with a brother or sister? Yeah, being definitely. In, you know, two yeah. decades, you should right. be, you know, kind of an example. So how have you used that, your own advice, to your coworkers?
For the same exact thing, you know, I was the guy that was like, oh, PTSD, whatever, you know. And so when we run calls, I do it a little differently. I'm very private when it comes to that. I wait till we get back to the station, and I don't care if I'm the firefighter and it's the captain, or if it's what rank. Rank holds no bearing on this. So I actually will, sometime during that shift, within the hour, 2 hours, approach the person by themselves. Like, hey, man, like, is everything cool? Are you okay? You know, did everything go all right? And so, you know, and I try to do it on a very sensitive level, because it's almost like eggshell. Mm-hmm. You don't want, there's still that macho stigma in the fire service where it's like, oh yeah, I'm cool, dude. I'm bro. I'm all right. You know, whatever. And everyone handles things differently. Everybody's different. Some mm-hmm. people don't want to be bothered, and that's okay too. You know.
Yeah.
But I think that it's so much better now. The level of playing field that we have now versus what we had 10, 15, 20 years ago. And we're still learning about it. We're still learning more stuff.
Well, you know, you and I, after that week that we had, it was just, you know, complete chaos. We actually took Misha and we left. We went down to the beach and kind of did our thing. And because when I was living down in SoCal, I didn't really have a family. You know, you were my family. So I was really appreciative of, you know, coming with you to that little family kind of getaway and taking her to the beach, taking her to some restaurants and, you know, all that. So it was, that's how I think you cope with it, is you take your dog out and go do things.
Oh, definitely. That's definitely the reset button for me. You know, when I pick her up from daycare or I come home and she's just like, daddy, and she's running toward me. I mean, that's only going to last so long too, which again, that's why I wanted to make sure I was home. I wanted to enjoy those days. I don't want to see her at 8 years old and miss all those fun years, you know? And that definitely, it just takes everything away.
Yeah.
Totally gets everything away. So it gets me back in the game when it's my turn to get back on day one, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think we joked about it before, where we're going to play that scene from Bad Boys 2, where she goes on her first date.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So, Mike, you know, thank you so much for your openness and your willing to come on. What's one message that you want to kind of let out there to people that are listening and watching? What's the drive at home?
I'd say a little bit of a few things. One thing is that this job is amazing. The people I met throughout my life, throughout my career in the fire service, there's a lot of wonderful, wonderful people out there. That being said, to get in the fire service, it sure is difficult. And if anybody knows me, I've been through the ringer over the last 20 years and just doing the best that I can to be where I want to be, work where I'd like to work, be in a position so that I can provide for my family, but also be home. And man, it's been a long haul and it's been a long trial, but I never gave up. And if anything I can tell you is, the moment you step to the side, the person right behind you just gave them your job.
Mm.
So never give up on that. Never give up on that.
Absolutely.
When you have somebody close enough that you feel loved and cared about, and you feel safe with, share with them a little bit and hold on to them, you know, and value them, because that's what's going to get you through the hard times.
Oh, absolutely. That's beautiful,
right,
man.
Yeah.
And you also are doing something for your own mental health, and I think it's for your mental health for sure. And it is your Fire Pride Project. So dive in a little bit real quick. Let the people know what that is.
Yeah, sure. It's pretty basic. I'm very passionate. I've got a bunch of stuff right here, but I'm very passionate about the fire service, the traditions. I definitely love the logos and the station patches, coins, hats, all that good stuff. When I was working in Tucson, one guy drew up a little logo. The department's over 100 years old. And one of my boys from Memphis asked me, hey, man, can I get that patch? And we didn't have a patch. So that's where it started. And my first little design looked like a third grade drawing. It was horrible. So I'm self-taught, still obviously, like anything in fire service, still teaching myself, still learning and doing stuff. And basically since 07 till now, I've helped design some logos for different departments throughout the United States. We make coins, hats, shirts, patches, all that stuff. And recently down in San Antonio, we had unfortunately a little boy who lost his mom and dad to COVID. And I just took it upon myself to just be like, hey, man, like, well, let's pull this together with some of the resources that I have and let's get some different things from different agencies and let's donate it. I saw him in Good Morning America and I just saw an opportunity and the door opened itself and I just ran with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to move into that direction where I'm enjoying making these products, but I am also seeing that there's some little needs here and there throughout. And I want to make sure that I'm not just getting, but also giving back.
Absolutely.
And, so it's a true blessing, man. It's a true blessing. And I definitely look forward to pushing it harder once into the next year in 2021.
Absolutely. Great. And this will definitely be a driving force behind that. Love for it. Sure.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
So, Mike, how we like to end these is called a little rapid fire. All right.
Rapid fire. I don't know about this one.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's going to be five right. questions, and I think you can handle it. And you have to answer in one word or one phrase, all right?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Cool.
They're not hard, so it's okay. Okay.
It's not the hardness that I'm worried about. It's the questions coming from me that I'm concerned
no,
about.
No, I wrote them. I wrote them.
She got this one.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Then we're safe. We're safe.
Yeah. Number one, what is one thing you're the most proud of?
My daughter.
Awesome. That's beautiful. Number two, what is your favorite sports team?
I don't have one.
No, Dodgers.
I like wrestling. UFC. I like single person sports. Surfing, okay. Wrestling, fighting. Right.
Okay. Next question. What's the best and worst meal you've ever made at the firehouse?
I've tasted some of them.
Oh, really? All right. So, best meal. I would have to say shredded beef tacos.
Mm. I have tried it. They
See,
are
what's
good.
My worst meal? What's my worst meal?
Go ahead. Let's see if we're on the same page.
I don't remember really what it was. I just put it together.
It was some sloppy it. Joe. It was something weird.
Yeah, like leftovers in the refrigerator.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it didn't work out.
But his salsa is amazing. His salsa is amazing.
Yeah, salsa's good.
Okay, number four. If you could teleport, where would you go?
Without COVID, probably Europe.
Yeah. Where? What country?
Germany.
Okay. Oktoberfest or just
like
anytime?
Okay. Cologne, actually. Cologne, Germany.
Okay. All right. And last one. What is one word to describe your mental health?
I'm not sure.
Unsure is your word.
Unsure.
My mental health, I'd say it's persistent. I don't know.
Persistent?
I can't really.
Persistent's not bad. Okay. All right. Well, okay. Mike, again, I know you're tired, bud. I know you just got off shift this morning. You had a couple calls after midnight. So really, really appreciate you coming on, bud. And your leadership is absolutely commendable and somebody that I would follow till the end of this earth.
Thanks, my brother. I appreciate it. It's always good to see you both.
Thank you. All right. This is Project Mayday. Call out.
Call out.
Thanks, Project Mayday.